All right, make sure you're in fellowship. Here, as we've dealt with the currency, hard currency, silver, used for monetary transactions in Egypt and Canaan, became exhausted. Famine hit everyone, and everyone used up all their savings in that vein in order to purchase grain. And all this money went to the royal treasury. At that point in time, obviously, people recognized that this was not going to be any free handouts. So the Egyptians petitioned Joseph for an alternative to the hard currency so that they can continue to purchase grain and maintain their livelihood. And the idea that is floated in regards to this is that Joseph would be willing to accept them mortgaging or pawning their livestock, which obviously has applicable value in regards to the government in and of itself, as income, if you will, for them that can be then translated to that which is necessary to purchase the grain. And just point 50, where we left off, Joseph's edict is found acceptable by the people. Quote, so they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange. While Bo McKenna that word is used a lot of times in these verses. Wabo McKenna L. Joseph Wow Nathan Wama Joseph Lechem. One of the common categories of animals here found in ancient societies included horses, or Hebrew sous, obviously primarily used for private transportation in that vein, maybe to pull some carts, things of that nature. As we note, this is first use of this noun in the Bible right here. Then you had their herds of flocks, as it's literally in the Hebrew, Mekena ha-tason, denoting their sheep and goats, animals of that variety. Then you had simply translated herds, is herds of cattle. That's Mekena bakar. This would include the bovine category of animals. And then finally we have donkeys. That's our Hebrew kamor. Donkeys used for commercial common transportation to carry loads and things of that nature. Joseph's brothers traveled with donkeys to carry their grain and stuff when they went from Canaan to Egypt back home in that vein. So 52, now this type of transaction was feasible for about a year. Their assets in this category of assets lasted about a year, quote, and he attended, translated fed, them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. You have Wow, Nahal, Bet, Ha, Lechem, Bet, Kol, McKenna, Bet, Ha, Shana, Ha, E. The Hebrew verb nahal, translated fed, I included the word attended in italics. The Hebrew nahal literally means that Joseph implemented his wisdom in business in this way, guiding them for survival. To lead, guide, direct is the nuance of that word. So Joseph obviously had a very sharp mind in regards to his abilities. Obviously, why he is vizier of Egypt in his position. So the Hebrew Nahal, point 53 again, literally means that Joseph implemented his wisdom in business in this way, guiding them for survival. 54, in other words, he established the moral and ethical way for their needs to be resolved. Morally, it is correct. He recognizes their need. He provides them with an alternative and way out of their situation. And ethically, obviously, he maintains the integrity of avoiding a welfare state, simply turning into some big government sugar daddy in regards to the citizens. It's all, if you will, biblically supported. With the famine, the Egyptians' means of supporting their animals was really beyond their capability. So his proposal for their livestock, in turn, actually provides the best means of protecting these livestock and for their very own survival. Because how are they going to support them with the famine going on? They're broke. The ground can, in general, overall, cannot produce sufficient fodder for their animals in that way. So 56, so in reality, Joseph is providing the people a way to protect their assets that would ultimately be destroyed otherwise. Pharaoh, obviously, land of Ramesses, would still have probably the minuscule of land that, such as in Goshen, that people were able to have livestock and they might survive during this famine. So, while the animals are in Pharaoh's care, Joseph's care, they will provide them with the substance necessary as much as possible, keeping alive for later use and hence resale in that regards. So 57, this is a legitimate role for government to provide venues of financial security for the people, to help in times of need, such as building up reserves for infrastructure, the development, maintenance of the country, and employment. Not the pork barrel skubala, borrowing our Greek word there. arts and entertainment, the liberal arts. Let's support them all so we can go up there and watch them slap the crap out of each other. Ad nauseum. Ad nauseum. Just sickening. The way the government wastes the taxpayer's dollar. And all the time they're in cahoots in bed with the world bankers, indebting the country more and more and more. Robbing the citizens, the assets. The way they rob it is often by declining, avoiding their permits in order to produce natural resources and put everybody in a bind. But anyway, so be it. Guess what? They're all going to stand before Jesus Christ just like everybody else is one of these days. They can answer then. Having a proper approach to fiscal priorities and responsibilities by both government and citizens provides a society that can survive even the worst of economic tests. Truly, a welfare system is destructive to the individual health and well-being of the citizen. It depreciates any drive and capabilities and abilities that they otherwise would utilize to exert themselves in providing their own work and employment and life. We're so far off track, there's no way it's ever going to get back. And all the things that our great merchants, bankers, somebody mentioned the other day that the pharmaceutical industrial complex is now larger than our military industrial complex. All these things is going to rust. Their gold is going to rust. James tells us that. Anytime anybody comes up that has a sound economical approach regards to society, obviously you see where the power's at. They don't survive. They don't hold a chance to survive in the political world in and of itself for any impact, really. All you can do is recognize the evil that's going on and clock it up as taking captive every thought for Christ. Let's see. 59, for governments to support handouts to their citizens is a gross error and unfair. That which is known as socialism. Our country is becoming steeped more and more into fascism, where private enterprise partners up with government to be their police. Germany is, in a certain aspect, happening all over again, in that sense. How soon people forget. Or maybe it's not that they forget, it's just the power of Satan's world. In its whirlwind momentum at this point in time in history that is overpowering any common sense otherwise. So, God blesses those whom He chooses to bless. Who are you to say that that blessing doesn't belong to them and that you should have a part of it. See? That's the idea. There's a particular verse that quotes that I can't think of at the top of my head, but we've been over it. We've read it. Welfare destroys incentive and devastates the characters of individuals in the process, aiding and abetting the lazy sluggards of society otherwise. Those unproductive leeches, economic leeches. That are a drain and simply just a avenue and pocketbook for unscrupulous types of politicians to line their own pockets. There are leeches on society, not unlike the homosexual population. Whether they had to offer humanity. Take your advice and reproduce. Of course, you got the whole other venue. Oh, we got to get rid of people. So. Truly, we live in Babylon. What is right is wrong. What is wrong is right. It is a land of chaos. Even our arch enemies recognize the chaos of which we operate under. So, 61, there is a place for living grace. To touch in on this, towards those that find themselves unable to support themselves due to illness or hardship. There may be an occasion where employment is impossible. The ability to work, a person is willing, but they can't. And there is a place for, as we would call it, living grace. 62, that need is to be met via the local church under the doctrine of giving. 2 Corinthians 8, 1 and following. We're told as a local church to apply in this area. Different churches, obviously. During the apostolic period, the apostles had a larger area of geographical authority than what the church was designed to evolve into through the pastor teacher. The apostle Paul, he was an apostle to the Gentiles. And his geographic canon, if you will, was fairly widespread. And he couldn't be every place at once. And his churches that would begin under his evangelizing and things of this nature, some were of wealthier venue. Others were of the more rural, poorer venue. The church of Corinth was very wealthy. And Paul established a living grace ministry to help out the saints in his other churches in times of need. He says, now brothers, addressing the Corinthians, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which is given in the churches of Macedonia. Financial applications in that region. Verse 2, that in a severe ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy, their inner happiness, and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. A church that was essentially poor based on economic standards. But they still reach deep into their pockets to help out in churches otherwise. For I testify that according to their ability, even beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. That denotes that giving in the church age dispensation is voting, is free will giving of your own accord. Again, that giving is to be done without strings attached. People are conditioned often to utilize giving as a form of manipulation and control of people. That's what the banks are doing to you, trying to control you. See, you raise your children, a proper way to raise them if you want to extend your gratitude or your parenting love to them, like in things, is tell them you're going to earn this. Teach them the value of work and earning rather than just giving and saying, if you're good, I'll give it to you. No, if you work and earn this by being good, see, it's a difference of mentality. It's a difference of lesson than it's yours, see. So that would be, you know, a proper way to maybe address something like that. But anyway, free will giving. Verse 4, begging us with much entreaty for the grace, literally, of participation, of the support of the saints. They wanted to apply. You didn't have to. Giving is not to be through over coercement or begrudgingly. It should come from the heart. Say heart, from the doctrine in your soul. That's what should stimulate you in regards to your giving. A giving is a royal imperative in regards to the support of the ministry. But on the other end of the coin, that should come, the application should come from the resources of the doctrine in your soul, not based on somebody up there locking the doors and saying, until you give X amount of dollars, you can't leave. That type of mentality, see. And it's to be low key. So we see this attitude, and it's an example that Paul is using in regards to the Corinthians. And this not as we expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God, verse 5. And then he goes into exhortation to them to give, which is completely appropriate. To encourage the doctrine to come forth in regards to the same, in regards to these Corinthians. Consequently, we urge Titus that as he had previously made at the beginning, so he would also complete with respect to you this grace as well, called gracious work, this application, financial application. For the Corinthians application, Titus, a pastor teacher of his time, along with Timothy, being under Paul's authority, and would be, if you will, a person that would carry the funds from one location to another on occasion. But just as you abound in everything, verse 7, in faith and utterance, doctrine and knowledge and in all earnestness your zeal and in the love, our love to you from us, literally the love we inspired in you is as is translated. See that you abound in this grace also. See, it's grace giving, hence we call it living grace. In verse 8, I'm not speaking by way of command, but as proving through the zeal of others of the genuineness of your love also. This is to show the evidence of how sincere you are in divine love. and application towards others. And in the verse that we quote before giving, in part, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he is rich, yet for your sake he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich." So, obviously, Paul goes to some length in addressing the Corinthian church and the proper application of giving to help out the saints. Obviously, it begins within one's own local assembly in priority. Then if there is an overflow of reserve or whatever, and other qualified saints at another church or whatever, another church, we would obviously seek to extend our application in that direction. But you've got to establish your priorities. Not every church can. Obviously, if a church can't put a person, their pastor, on full maintenance, they don't need to be shipping their money out to other pastors and missionaries. It's one of the things that for any out there that may listen to the videos or tapes, Bible study group or whatever, and they're interested in having a local church of their own and they need a pastor, teacher, well, you need to get your priorities intact. And that, first and foremost, to make sure you have financial income necessary to support your pastor. And that obviously includes a place to meet and things of that nature. So, anyway. So, speaking of priorities, point 63, the priority of giving is to go to those within the church. So, on the other end of the coin, even with a Living Grace ministry, we're not to be a welfare institution that so many people look to churches to be outside the church. We're not here as a social program of the government for free handouts, etc. It should be under legitimate terms. And it doesn't mean that you don't apply. If it's legitimate, you might, accordingly. Obviously, people that call here, that I feel their calls, the first question out of my mouth is, do you work? Are you trying to work? History of the World, Part 1, that's coming to my mind for some reason. But anyway. Yeah. All the excuses out there. Forget it. Go somewhere else. We're not a welfare institution. We're a local church. What about your church? Have you been to your church to see if they can help you? I don't go to church. Well, there you go. There you go. Bleeding Heart fundies, they would just mowed all over these types of people. Doctrine's hardcore. Either you line up with it or you're out of line. And you don't sit there and compromise doctrine in regard to people based on emotions and feelings. You have to line it out. Obviously, you're going to extend grace as appropriate. And not to say that you don't have compassion and empathy in regard to people's situations. But doctrine must come first. Galatians 6:10. And in that respect, the priority should go to those of the household of the faith within your own circles to begin with, then, as I stated, as opportunity may arise elsewhere. And Paul says to the church of Galatia, "So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men." Obviously, that's a divine good. That's applying Bible doctrine to all men. An extension of help, etc. Application towards your neighbor. Things of this nature. And then he says, and especially, that's number one priority to those who are of the household of the faith. Household of faith is an expression for those of the local church. First Timothy 5:8. For those who otherwise despise giving and not willing to apply, and obviously this assumes that one has the capability to apply. If you can't put it on your own table, God's not going to hold you accountable for not being able to extend grace to others in the same vein. But otherwise, the attitude to giving, 1 Timothy 5:8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, see, this again shows you the priorities of life, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Even an unbeliever will take care of their own. Even an unbelieving parent will make sure their child's taken care of, see. For those who dismiss responsibility or opportunities to apply towards those of the household. Well, you see what category doctrine places you under. So the question is, if someone does not go to church, point 64, well, you can always move to the U.S. of Babylon. We have the social welfare program. We'll give you all that you want for nothing. All you got to do is line up and vote liberal. You sure don't want to vote libertarian, that's for sure. All right. It doesn't end here. God places Egypt under this test with Joseph, and it continues to extend forward into the years. And it doesn't get any better immediately. It gets worse. So verses 18 through 20 now finishes the concept of Joseph not allowing a welfare state to become part of Egyptian government. Get the verses here in the Hebrew, verse 18. And when that year was ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, he had the wow consecutive. Our verb to end again is the cow and perfect third feminine singular verb, thamam, T-H-A-M-A-M. We saw that in the preceding verses in regards to the money being finished. Here the year is ended or finished. Translated ended. Followed with a definite article or a noun for year. Common feminine singular absolute, Shana. S-H-A-N-A-M.